Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Chulin Daf Yud Gimel. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our home page. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the daf before the shiur, and even better, order your personal volume of this maseches. Our address is gmarkings@gmail.com. As we mentioned in our previous shiur, we would be starting a sugya, a section that we were forced to stop in the middle of. What we are trying to say is that in order to appreciate the topic that we are going to be continuing with, it is necessary to be familiar with that which we learned toward the end of our previous shiur. In general terms, we are trying to understand what Rabbi Yochanan was asking when he raised the question of Katan Yeshlo Machshava o Ein Lo Machshava. The issue of Machshava has to do with intent. The practical application of intent has broad application. In introducing the sugya, we spoke about the need to slaughter a korban with proper intent, namely, when slaughtering a korban, one is to intend that he is slaughtering that which it is designed to be. In other words, if one is offering a korban ola, the shechita is supposed to be with the intent that I am now shechting a korban ola. As far as the meaning of Rabbi Yochanan's question, we pointed out in our previous shiur that it would take several stages of Gemara in order to determine what, in fact, he is asking. Because if it's the simple question of Yeshlo Machshava, Eino Machshava, that is actually dealt with by a Tanaic source that was cited by the Gemara in our previous shiur. So Rabbi Yochanan, being an Amora, wouldn't be asking about something whose answer is clear in a Tanaic source. Therefore, we pick up today's shiur at the top line of Daf Yud Gimel with a triangle in the middle of the line, and to the immediate left-hand side of the Gemara, you will notice a little bays also in a triangle. This indicates that we are at the second stage of trying to understand what Rabbi Yochanan's question was. Omar Lei, so the speaker here is Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba, is responding to Rav Ami's question that we ended off with in our previous year. Rav Chiya Bar Abba says, "Machshava greitza lo komei bayalei." In fact, simple greitza would mean simple machshava. The idea of does a koton have the power of intent? That is, in fact, not a question that Rabbi Yochanan is asking, as we saw in the previous year. That was dealt with, and it was stated that since he is a minor, he does not have the power of intent. Ki komei bayalei, the when is something a question to Rabbi Yochanan? The following is the question. Machshavosoi nikeres mitoch maisav. Intent that's not merely expressed by simple words, but intent that is demonstrated through action. Kagon, example of this would be Dehava kaima oyla bedorom. A korban ola is in the southern part of the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. We have to note that the southern part of the courtyard is not an area fit for the slaughtering of kodshei kodshim, included in which is the korban ola. The asyuha batsofon, and the katan, the minor, brought the animal to the northern part of the azara and did not say anything. Veshachta, and he slaughtered it. My, what are we to understand from this case? Two sides of the question. We have featured this with our markings Aleph and then O Dilma Beis. Midaasya betzafon v'shachat ichvin lo. From the fact that he physically brought the animal to the north. to the northern part of the temple courtyard and slaughtered it there, that shows us that he had kavona, that he had the desired intent. Oy dilma, mokum hu dulo esrami le. Or he was moving it out of the south simply because there was no room in the south, but not in order to fulfill the need for an ola to be specifically in the north. So that, as far as Rabbi Chiya bar Abba is concerned, is what Rabbi Yochanan was asking about. Once again, the concept is machshavoso nitkeres mitoch myself. Through his action, can we determine kavona? The Gemara responds to this, ha nami omro Rabbi Yochanan chadazimna. This case was addressed by Rabbi Yochanan also in the past. Rabbi Yochanan already dealt with this. If that be the case, so then what is Rabbi Yochanan asking in our sugya, which began on Yud Beis Amud Beis? If you have Yud Beis Amud Beis in front of you and you want to scroll back to see it, you will notice that we had Rabbi Yochanan in a firebox. And it was at that point that Rabbi Yochanan was raising the question. Now, he wouldn't raise a question concerning something he's already dealt with. So that's what is happening now in the Gemara. We also feature this along with a long question marking. You can see to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara a little kuf that's encircled with a descending vertical dashed line, indicating that all of the lines that are opposite this marking form the question. And the point of the Gemara is to show how Rabbi Yochanan already dealt with this scenario of machshava nikeres mitoch maisav. The Gemara continues, disnan, the following Mishnah says, hamale peroisov legag mitnei hakinima. A person brought his fruits up to the roof of his house because in his house there apparently was some type of attack, of an insect attack. The type of insect referred to here is a kinima. So he brought his fruits up to the roof. The yorad aleihem tal, and dew fell on the fruits. Dew accumulated on the fruits. A word of introduction. Fruits themselves are mekabel tuma, can absorb ritual impurity only if they have been mukhshar lekabel tuma. Mukhshar lekabel tuma is a phenomenon whereby fruits became wet. You rinsed off the fruits, for example, and the wetness is something that you desire. For example, rain fell on the fruits. On fruits, we're talking about fruits that are not attached to the tree. Of course, we're talking about loose fruits. And you are satisfied with the water that's accumulated on the fruits. At that point, the fruits are said to be mukhshar lekabel tuma. They are ready and susceptible to tuma absorption if they should now come into contact with a source of tuma. The expression for mukhshar lekabel tuma is in the source you'll see is b'chi yutan. So the person here brought his fruits up to the roof, not with any due intention. He simply wanted to avoid the kinima. And it just happened that dew fell on his fruits. Einon b'chiyutan. The source tells us that the fruits are not b'chiyutan, which for our purposes means they are not mukhshar l'kabel tuma. There is more explanation that is warranted for understanding the expression b'chiyutan, but for our purposes it's not binding. The source goes on to say, v'im niskavim lekach, if he had intention for dew to fall on the fruits, in other words, by bringing them up to the roof, he may have intended for them to avoid the kanima, but he also had in mind that the fruits should become wet. Then harehein b'chiyutan, then they are mukhshur l'kabel tuma. They become susceptible to tuma absorption should the fruits come into contact subsequently with a source of ritual impurity. Now the source goes on to what is of more interest to us vis-a-vis this particular sugya, he'elum cheres shoyte v'katan. Notice we've dashed underline katan because he is the central point of our discussion. A deaf mute or an imbecile or a minor brought them up to the roof because of the kinima, afal pi sheniskavnu lekach, even though they had intent for the dew to fall on the fruits, einon bechiyutan, the fruits will not be mukshir lekabotuma, b'pnei sheyesh lohem maisa ve'ein lohem machshava. They have the capacity of action, however, something that is dependent on intent, they do not have. So that their machshava, their expression of intent that these fruits should become wet, that is not sufficient to make them mukshir lekabel tuma. The Omer of Yochanan, lo shanu elo shelo hipech bohen. This idea that the Koton's intention is insufficient to render the fruits mukshar lekabel tuma, this is so only if after the fruits became wet, the child left them as is. He didn't flip them over. Aval hipech bohen, if the fruits, after the one surface of them, let's say that after the top of the fruits became wet with dew, the child then flipped the fruits over, showing that he's interested that the bottom side of the fruits should also experience the water. Hare ze b'chiyutan. That will enable the fruits, or that will cause the fruits to become susceptible for tuma absorption, and then that which we call, they then will be mukshir lekabel tuma. Here you have an example of a maise mochiach, an action that manifests his intention. It's not a mere statement, a mere expression of intent, but an action that accompanies an action that shows what his intent was. Let us look at the Rashi a few lines down from here. Avol hipech bohen, de maisov mochichen, his action shows. V'afagav shelo piresh machshavo. So even though he did not articulate his intention, hoyol v'nikur, since it's clear shedaito lekach, that his intent is for this, for the fruits to become wet on the bottom side as well. Hare hein b'chiyutan. This will enable them or cause them to be mukshir lekabel tuma. De'i b'shapiresh machshavoso b'shas maise. If we had been speaking about a case where that while he's flipping over the fruits, he's also telling us why he's doing it, namely that he wants it to become wet on all sides, lo itzrich Rabbi Yochanan shminen. That Rabbi Yochanan would not have to tell us about. Deha behedya tanan de'esh la maise. We've already learned that they have maise, and we explained when we learned that on the bottom of Yud Beis Omid Beis, with regard to hollowing out of different fruits, the Rashi had explained that they are hollowing out the fruits and also telling us why they are doing it. In other words, they were doing it for the purpose of making a vessel. So that would be already, that's too obvious. So Rabbi Yochanan's chiddush over here, when he says that aval hipech b'hen harei zeh b'chiyutan, he's going a step further, and he's telling us that even without actually expressing his intention, the fact that he's flipping them over is clear demonstration of the child's intent for the fruit to become wet, and that is sufficient to make them mukshir lekabel tuma. Now, not to lose sight of the forest for the trees, the sugya we are dealing with is trying to understand Rabbi Yochanan's question. Rabbi Yochanan asked, does a koton have machshav or not? What is Rabbi Yochanan asking about? This brings us to the third stage. Hochi komebayale. This is what Rabbi Yochanan is asking about. De oiraisa oi de rabbonan. When we speak about the koton having, let's say, a machshava hanikeres mitoch maisav, is that true? Is it binding on a Torah level? And if it's true on a Torah level, then we will rely on it, even if the result is a point of leniency. Example, like that which we raised before regarding the Ola, the Korban Ola that he moved from the southern part of the courtyard to the northern part, and then it was slaughtered there in the northern part. The cotton then slaughters it in the northern part. That would be acceptable. That's if you say that machshava nikeres toch maisav is doraisa. However, if you say it's rabbinic, then we will say it's rabbinic only when it's rabbinic and has a binding effect only if the result is a point of stringency. That would be true, for example, with the flipping over of the fruits, where they now become subject to absorbing ritual impurity. But as far as something that would be a point of leniency and allowance, we would not rely on the cotton's action. The action being the machshava nikeres mitoch maisav, as Rashi explained, it's where a mais is done without his expressing verbally what he is trying to accomplish. So, as far as our sugya is concerned, that is, we've reached an understanding of what Rabbi Yochanan was asking about. As far as an answer to that, that's not the it's not the role or the intent of this particular piece of Gemara. The point of this Gemara was to present what Rabbi Yochanan's original question was, and we have seen his question was the idea that Rabbi Yochanan himself had said that a katan has machshava when it's nikeres mitoch maisav, is that deraisa or derabanan? As we go on in the Gemara, we now encounter Roman numeral number 2. This is a second version of this sugya, and this we already pointed out when we started the sugya on Yud Beis Amid Beis under our Mivneh heading. So Rav Nachman bar Yitzchok Masni Hochi, he presents the discussion as follows. Omer Priya bar Abba, Boy Rabbi Yochanan, Koton Yesh lo Maise o Ein lo Maise. Notice the difference between this Lashon, this version, and the original Lashon in Lashon number 1. There, Rabbi Priya bar Abba presented Rabbi Yochanan as asking Koton Yesh lo Machshava in lo Machshava. Here, his question is Yesh lo Maise o Ein lo Maise. Omer Lei Rabbi Ami. Rabbi Ami responds, "V'tiboy lei machshava." Why does Rabbi Yochanan not ask about whether or not a katan has machshava? The Rashi, you can see under the Gemara text, the fourth line under the Gemara, "V'tiboy lei machshava shchita greitza upiresh l'shem oila," where a katan is slaughtering an ola korban, and he tells us, "I am slaughtering. I intend for this to be the slaughter of an ola." Rashi goes on to say that the actual act of the shechita doesn't constitute a maise mochiach. Rashi says, "Ushechita lav maise mochiach al machshavu shekol hashechita shavas." All slaughterings are the same, so that the actual slaughtering, even though it's a physical action, it doesn't play a role in our sugibus. We're trying to take advantage of the action in order to define intent. But since the machshava is uniform with regard to all korbanos, it doesn't show us anything about this specific sacrifice. So the question Rabbi Yochanan is asking of whether koton yesh lo maisa or not maisa, Rabbi Ami asks back, why doesn't Rabbi Yochanan ask about whether he has machshava or not? And what we mean by that is he says what his intention is. Do we rely on that? So, my shno machshava delo ka mibayale. Why is it, in fact, that Rabbi Yochanan does not ask about that? Disnan, because it's taught ein lo hen machshava. We've seen that already in a Tanaic source. Well, by the same token, my sinami lo tibayale. Rabbi Yochanan doesn't need to ask about maisa either. Disnan yesh lohen maisa. It has been taught, in fact, in the same Tanaic source, that the cotton does have maisa. This, by the way, was the last line of Yud Beis Amid Beis. So what is Rabbi Yochanan's question? It's not as it was presented here, cotton yesh lo maisa lo. That would have been too obvious, as it was already revealed in a Tanaic source. Hochi kol mebayale. Thusly is his question. D'oraisa oi d'rabbanan. Is it doraisa? And if that be the case, we would rely on his. We would rely on the katan, even if the result is a kula, a leniency, Or if you say it's the Rabbanon, then it would only be, we would rely on the Kotan only if it results in a stringency. And that would be the case, for example, where the Kotan, let's say, carved out a fruit in order to use the shell as a kli, so then we would say it becomes a kli, and the stringency is it now becomes subject to a tumah absorption because it is becoming defined as a kli. Uposhit, and he answered. There are several points that we have raised, and you'll see how they are responded to. First of all, yesh lahen maisa ve'afilu midoraisa. When we speak about the Kotan having maisa, namely he does an action and says what he is trying to accomplish, we rely on what he says. Even midoraisa means even if the result is a point of leniency. So that if you have a Kotan, let us say, carrying a Korban Ola from the southern part of the Azorah to the northern part of the Azorah, telling us, I'm taking it to the north because only in the north is it acceptable. And then he goes and slaughters the Korban in the north. The Korban will be a success. That's what we mean by relying on the Kotan, even midoraisa, because by declaring it is a success, the owner doesn't have to make up on it, to bring any replacement sacrifice. A second point that's being ruled upon, Ein lohen machshava v'afilu midrabanan. With regard to the issue of does a kotan have machshava, whereby he expresses intent without any specific defining action, the mere expression of intent, the kotan lacks. Even midrabanan, even if the result would be some stringent ruling, stringency, it takes no effect. That, by the way, an example of that would be the case where he brought fruits up to the roof, and he was bringing them up there because of the kinema, and he told us that he would be happy with the water that lands on it. So by saying Ein lohen machshava, his announcement that he's happy with the water that lands on it will not cause the fruits to be mukhshar lekabel tumah, because we're saying that even if the result is a stringency, we still do not place any premium on what the kotan says. A third point that is ruled upon, machshavasu nikeres mitoch maisav, the issue of a revelation of his intent through his action. This was the case that we saw with the flipping over of the fruits that became wet with the dew. After they became wet, the cotton came and flipped them over. That was a case of machshava nikeres mitoch maisav, or a situation we saw also where the ola was in the southern part of the azara, and he carried the animal to the northern part of the azara without telling us what he was trying to do. So midoraisa ein lo. When it comes to relying on the kotan across the boards, even if the result would be leniency, that far we do not go. However, midrabonon yeshlo, and that means only lechumra. Let us glance at the Rashi. There's a Rashi that's marked off with a double star, and we've written the Rashi says there midrabonon yeshlo ulechumra. This we saw with regard to the flipping over of the fruits without his telling us why, but after they became wet with the dew, he flipped them over. It's obvious that he wants them the bottom side of the fruits also to become wet. So we say midrabanan yeshlo, meaning that in that case we will say they are now mukhshar lekabel tumah. However, midoraisa ein lo, Rashi says v'gabi bayon kamaisa. The Ola, regarding our original question with regard to the Ola, where he carried the Ola from the southern part of the Azorah to the northern part and didn't tell us what he was trying to do, then lo samchin alah, we don't rely on that as a demonstration of his awareness that the Ola needs to be done in the north. Bominei Shmuel Rav Huna. This is a little piece of Gemara that has been alluded to on other occasions. Minayin lemisasek bekotshim shu puzzle. From where do we know that a person, when dealing with sacrifices, and he is thinking about something else, and he's thinking about a particular action as being something other than what it needs to be, even though the desired result happens, but his intention is for something else, that is considered puzzle. What would be an example of that? Let's say a person is picking up a knife that fell on the floor, and his intention is to pick it up from the floor. As he's picking it up, it happens to slice the neck of a korban in the Beis HaMikdash. So shechita is accomplished, but he had no shechita intention. His intention was focused on picking up the knife. That's called misasek. So from where do we know that misasek, when it comes to the realm of sacrifices, that it's even though the necessary action resulted, nevertheless it's unfit, it's invalid. Shenemar, the pasuk says, v'shochat es ben habokar, and from that we learn shtei shchita l'shem ben bokar, that the cutting action of the knife shall be with the intent of slaughtering an animal. Omar lo, so Rav Shmuel had asked of Rav Huna. Rav Huna provided an answer. Shmuel now responds, Zu biodenuhi, what you answered, we know that already. As far as a source for the need for, or the need to avoid misasik bekotshim, that we know. And from that we learn that you have to have kavona. However, I was asking about something else. Le'akev minayin. I was asked about the need for kavona on a binding level. In other words, if it's lacking, will we say that the korban is posel? So, Omar Le, to that there is a response also. Lirin soinchem tizbachuhu. This is called a repeat idea in the Torah, and the interpretation of L'Ritzonchem Tizbachu is L'Daitchem Zavochu, with your intent they are to be slaughtered. And the fact that a same idea is repeated in two separate psukim, that shows us that it is binding. With the appearance of the idea in one pasuk, we only learn that it's the proper thing to do, but we don't know that if it's missing, that it would cause psul. From the fact that something is repeated, what we call Shinol of a Kosov L'Akev, that shows us that the need for intent is binding, and the situation of lack of intent is called misasek. The Mishnah. Shchitas oved kochavim nevela umetama b'maso. If a Gentile slaughters, even if he slaughters with all the proper shechita requirements and others are watching him, nevertheless the result is unkosher as far as consumption, and it's labeled here as nevela, and a nevela is metame b'maso. That means that not just the contact with it, but even the supporting of nevela. The classic example would be someone is holding a tray, and on the tray is nevela. That would be called an example of maso, even though he's not in direct contact with the meat itself. Nevertheless, since he is supporting the meat, that communicates tumah, called tumas maso. The Gemara, as it opens up, has two lishonos. You'll notice they are featured with Roman numeral number 1 to the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara text, and a few lines later, a Roman numeral number 2. In the middle of that line, you'll see a squiggle underlined expression, Rabbi Ami Omar Hochi Kotani. We often employ the squiggle underline in situations where you have multiple lishonos, multiple versions of something. Now, the topic right now concerns machsheves akum b'shchita, the mindset of a Gentile during shchita, and what ramifications does that have. So our Gemara says, nevela in isur hanolo. The classification of the shchita of Yehovim is that the meat is classified as nevela, but not as something that is forbidden to derive benefit from. A nevela is something one can sell to someone else. He can give it to his dog. Nevela is something you're allowed to benefit from. So we are drawing an inference from this Mishnah that the shechit of the Ovid Kochavim results in the meat becoming nevela, but not becoming forbidden to benefit from. Can you give us an example of something that is forbidden to benefit from? So the answer, yeah, we could give an example of that. That's something that would be, for example, a meat or an animal that's slaughtered in service of an idol. That a case of being shoychet l'avodah zarah, the meat would be aser b'hano. Here you have a Gentile that slaughtered an animal. The Mishnah rules that the meat may be aser to eat as nevela is, but you can benefit from it. Ma'antana, who is the author of this idea, namely that the shechita of a Gentile does not result in the meat becoming aser b'hano? Amr b'chia Rabbi Abba, Amr Rabbi Yochanan, delo k'Rabbi Eliezer. This result that the meat is muter b'hano is not like Rabbi Eliezer would learn. D'i Rabbi Eliezer ha'omar, if it were Rabbi Eliezer, but he has been known to say that stam machshevs ovi kochavim la'avoidas kochavim. The standard mindset of a Gentile when slaughtering, his intent is to slaughter in service to his idol. That's Rabbi Lezer Shita. If that were the case in our Mishnah, the Shechitas Ovid Kochavim would have been classified not as Nevela, but classified as Aser B'hano, or there are other terms that are relevant to that, for example, Zivchei Mesim, but that's not what is taught. Therefore, we want to conclude in the first version that our Mishnah is not in accordance with Rabbi Eliezer. Rabbi Ami Omar Hochi Kotoni. Rabbi Ami says, thusly we are to learn. Shechitas ovid kochavim nevela. If a Gentile slaughters, a Gentile here is someone classified as an idol worshipper, if he slaughters, it results in it being a nevela. Ha de min. If the one slaughtering it was a min. A min is someone who doesn't merely serve an idol, but he is deeply involved, we can say philosophically and everything else. He's very deeply involved with idolatry beyond mere superficial worship. So if a min were to slaughter, then we would say his shechita is la'avodas kochavim. His shechita, when a min maybe we could say is someone you would call a priest, someone whose whole life is dedicated to idolatry, someone like that, when he shechts, then that would be in service of his idol. There's a Rashi that we have noted with a star toward the bottom of the page, five lines up from the bottom. You notice there's a dashed underlined section. Rabbi Ami lo polig ad Rabbi Chia. Rabbi Ami, who is the author of the second version of this sugya, is not coming to argue on that which we said in the first lashon. Namely, Rabbi Ami agrees that our Mishnah is not in accordance with Rabbi Elo lo itzrich le lemedak. All Rabbi Ami is telling us that you didn't have to draw that as an inference. By virtue of the fact that the Mishnah called the Shechitas Ovid Kochavim Nevela, I understand that it's Mutar B'hano. So I don't have to, according to Rabbi Ami, I don't have to learn like we did in Lashon 1, using the word Nevela as a point of drawing an inference. Because the word Nevela itself conveys the idea that it's Mutar B'hano. The Gemara continues, Tanina leha d'tan rabbanan. That means that we have a brisa whose content is reflected in our Mishnah. Shechitas min, when a min does shechita, that's l'avodes kechavim. Now Rashi points out Shchitas Min di Yisrael. This means a Jew who went off the path and became deeply involved with idolatry. So his Shchita is considered a Shchita for the idol. Rashi goes on to say V'kol shekein de'oyvei kechavim. And all the more so a min that happens to be not of a Jewish not of Jewish origin but of Gentile origin. V'ha masnisin miha b'Yisrael kaima. Our Mishnah is whereas this Tanaic source that the Gemara is featuring now is focused on Jews. Midikoma peroisav tvolim ubonav mamzerim. From the fact that there are further descriptions of whom we are talking about. And therefore, I understand that the man here is of Jewish identity. So, Shchitas Min, that opened up this source, means a Min who happens to be of Jewish pedigree. He simply philosophically went off the path. So when he shechts, his Shchita is l'avodas kavod. His Shchita is, you can rest assured, was a Shchita in service of an idol. Pito paskusi, bread that he prepares, has the din of the bread of Gentiles. Yeno equals yayin nesech. His wine is considered idolatrous wine. Svarov sifrei koismin. His books, including scrolls that he may have prepared. He may have even prepared a Sefer Torah. Nevertheless, we view his writings as Sifrei Koismin. Sifrei Koismin, Rashi says that it's a reference to Nevi'ei Habaal. In other words, it has no holiness. It's considered books of sorcerers or books of idolatry. Even though, on the surface, it looks like a Sefer Torah. Peirosov Tevalim. His fruits are considered untithed. The Yesh Omrim, there's another opinion that says, Af Bonov Mamzerim, that his children are also disqualified from marrying into the Jewish people, that his children are Mamzerim. And Rashi explains, the min is not makbid on his wife, and his wife being an ashesish, being married to the min, but since he is not concerned with her moral behavior, she will go and have relations with others, and as a married woman having relations with another man other than her husband, the child that results is called a mamzer. The Tanakama, the Gemara here is asking a question. Why did the Tanakama not include as one of the features of a min that his children are mamzerim? So to that, the Gemara explains, Ishto lam lafkir. According to the Tanakama, the min would not leave his wife morally loose. He wouldn't mafkir her. He wouldn't abandon her, so to speak, as far as husbandly supervision, and therefore, according to the Tanakama, she wouldn't go with other men. Omar Mar. At this point, we quote from that which was mentioned before. Shchitas Ovid Yehovim Nevelo. If you see a Gentile slaughtering, so the meat that results is classified as Nevelo. And we said the practical application of that is you can't eat it, but you can sell it and benefit from it. The Gemara asks, "Venechu shemo minhu?" Why not suspect that the Gentile that is doing this slaughtering is a min? And we saw with regard to minim, his slaughtering is considered as slaughtering as service to an idol, and you wouldn't be able to benefit from that meat. Why does our Tanaic source here say that his shchita is simply nevela? Om Rav Nachman, Om Rabba Baravua, Ein Minin Be'umois Oivde Kechavim. If you see a Gentile doing a slaughtering, you don't have to suspect he is a min, because there are no minin amongst the nations of the world. The Gemara asks, V'ho kochazino d'ika, but we see that there are Gentile priests in the world. We are using the term priest interchangeable with the word min. So by trying to say that there are no minim amongst the nations of the world, but we see that there are, Emor Ein Rov Ovde Kechovim Minim. What we are trying to say is that the majority of Gentiles are not Minin. And therefore, if you see a Gentile concerning whom you know nothing, you don't have to assume that his shechita was lavodis kechovim, but rather his shechita is classified as nevela, something you are able to benefit from through selling it or the like. So by answering this, that ein rov kechovim minim, sovar law ki ha diomer b'chia bar abba on Rabbi Yochanan, this is in accordance with Rabbi Yochanan's teaching, nochrim shebechutz la'aretz lav ovde avodis kechovim hein, the Gentiles outside of Israel are not true idol worshippers. Ah, but the fact that they go to idolatrous houses of worship, that's elo minag avoseihem biyodehem. Their practices are only in following with their family traditions. But as far as actual belief in idols, that they do not have. Omar Rav Yosef bar Menuhin Amar Rav Nachman, Ein Minin Be'umois Ovdei Kechovim. The term Ein Minin means Ein Toras Min. The rules of Min do not apply amongst the Gentile world. The Gemara wants to understand, what does Rav Nachman mean by this? Limai. And as we go on in the Gemara, you'll notice the employment of a double underline as a marking. This is explained in the outside margin under our Nosei Mivne heading. The double underline appears, and we've explained Shlavim, stages, Lahazbir, Dvorav Shel Rabbi Yosef Bar Menuhin. We are going to go through some stages and trying to understand what he said, what did he mean when he said, Ein Minin Be'umos Ovdei Kechovim. So now, turning back to the Gemara, what does he mean by that? Lamai. If you are trying to say that a Gentile min who does shechita, that it doesn't have the halachic status of shechitas min, that is not true. Hasha shechitas min the Yisrael amris asira. Mind you, the shechita of a Jew who went off the path and became a min, we say that the resultant meat is forbidden to benefit from, and that's the case of someone who started off as a Jew. To oved kechovim mibaya, would I have to tell you about a min who happens to be a Gentile from the outset? Certainly, there would be a din of minus in such a case. So Rav Nachman, who said ein minin b'umos ovdei kechovim, couldn't be referring to this issue. Elo lemoridin. Maybe it refers to a concept that's featured in Maseches Avodah Zarah called moridin. There are certain types of people whose level of sin is so intense that we tell you that you can put them into a pit and let them die there. That's moridin. Put them, descend, or put them down into a pit. So maybe Rav Nachman is telling us that when it comes to a min from the Gentiles, a goyisha min, we would not put him in the pit. Well, that's not true. Hashta v'Yisrael moridin. Mind you, a person who is of Jewish origin, who decided to practice minus, who decided to become a priest to an idol, and he is of Jewish background, someone like that we will put into a pit. The Ovdei Kechovim Mibaya. Do I need to tell you about the Gentile who happens to be a min? All the more so, we would put him into a pit. So that's not what Rav Yosef bar Menuhin could have meant when he said Ein Minin Be'umos Ovdei Kechovim, that there is no Toras Min, no law of Minin by the Goyim. Stage 3. Omar Rav Ukvar bar Chamo Lekabel Mehen Korban. The idea that there is no Minin amongst the Goyim means that we will accept a sacrifice from him, from a goy, from a Gentile who decided to become a min. Nevertheless, we'll accept a korban from him. The source points this out. Mikem, here we're citing a a word from the pasuk. And the word mikem has a certain limitation connotation. From amongst you. Mikem velo kulchem. We will accept korbanos from you, from amongst you, but not from all of you. And here we're talking about the Jewish people. Lehoitzi es hamumar. This is to exclude the mumar. The mumar is a sinner. A sinner, we will not accept a korban from him. Mikem teaches me, bochem chilakti velo boavdi kochavim. Amongst the Jews, we make distinctions between sinners and non-sinners. From non-sinners, we will accept sacrifices, but from mumars, from sinners, we will not accept their sacrifices. We talk about sinner, of course, we're talking about someone who's sinning, a willing sinner. His sins bemazed, and not referring to a person who happened to make a mistake. The second point here is that amongst the Jews, we make distinctions between mumars and non-mumars, but not when it comes to Gentiles. In other words, when it comes to Gentiles, we accept their sacrifices even from Gentile sinners. Mimai, how do you know that this is the point? Dilma hochi komar, maybe the intent of this source, when it says, mikem bochem chilakti velo bovdi kochavim, is not as we explain, a general acceptance of sacrifices from Gentiles, but rather quite the opposite. Maybe thusly, hochi komar, Mi'Yisrael, mitzadiki kabel mirshilok to kabel. When it comes to Jews, accept sacrifices from the righteous Jews, not from the wicked ones. When it comes to Gentiles, even from the righteous ones, do not accept sacrifices at all. Maybe that's the intention of this limud. The Gemara rejects this out hand and says, lo sakadaitach, don't even think that. The Sanya, there is a Tanaic source which begins with a quote from a pasuk, which Rashi quotes. The full pasuk is found in the Rashi, Ishish mi beis Yisrael min ager, agor bi Yisrael shiyakiv korbono, etc. So the word ish is featured as the opening of this source, as ish ma tamud lomar ish ish. What is meant by the double expression? The word ish appears in this pasuk doubled, ish ish mi beis Yisrael. So what does the double expression convey? This is to include Gentiles as having the power to offer voluntary sacrifices just as a Jew. So to suggest that when it comes to Ovi Kovim, we don't accept sacrifices from them at all, that's simply not true. We learn from this Gzeres HaKosov of Ish Ish that Gentiles do bring sacrifices. And therefore the limud above of Bochem Chilakti Vlobo Ovi Kovim is telling us that when it comes to Jews, we have a dual standard, namely accepting from tzaddikim, from righteous Jews, and not accepting from wicked Jews. When it comes to Gentiles, no distinction is made, and therefore even a Gentile who is a min, and he wants to bring a sacrifice to the Beis HaMikdash, he can bring it, and the Kohanim will process his korban. Umetama b'masa. The Mishnah had said that the Shechitas Ovi Chovim is a nevela, and it added that it conveys Tumas Masa. So the Gemara asks, why does the Mishnah have to tell me it's Metama B'Masa? Pshita, that's obvious. Kevon de nevela hi, since it is a nevela, and that the Mishnah told us, Metama B'Masa. That's the rule of a nevela. It's known. Why does the Mishnah have to add seemingly obvious information? Before we go on in the Gemara, we immediately notice in the immediate right-hand side of the Gemara a Roman numeral number 1, and a few lines later a Roman numeral number 2. In the middle of that line, you see a squiggle underline expression, Iko di Amri. Iko di Amri indicates an alternative lashon, another version of the discussion. In our marking system, when you have alternative versions presented, we attempt to squiggle underline the expression of transition. In this case, Iko di Amri. Under our Nosei Mivneh heading that you might notice in the outside margin, we have featured a Roman numeral number 1 and 2, and we've also written Shnei Lishonos B'mashmois Hodikotani Shchitas Avichovim Metamed B'maso. Two ways of understanding that which the Mishnah teaches, that the slaughtering of a Gentile results in Tumas Masa. So we open up the Gemara with version 1, Omar Rava, Hochi Kotani. Thusly, we are to understand the Mishnah. Zu Metame B'Masa, this, namely the Shechita of the Gentile, results in Tumas Masa. There's another situation where the result would be Tumas Ohel. Tumas Ohel is a situation where the item, we'll call the questionable item, and a person or something else that's Tohar are under the same overshadow or under the same roof. The problematic substance will convey Tuma to the person or vessel, and certainly food item, through Tumas Oil, through the fact that they're both units are overshadowed. So Rava points out that the Gentile Shechita results in meat that's classified as Nevela and hence Metama Maso. However, there's another situation where the meat will be Metama even Be'oil, the Ezo, and what's that case? Zu Takruvas Avidus Kechavim Uchu Rebbe Yehuda Ben Besero. This is an animal offered to an idol. An animal slaughtered is as service to an idol. That meat is not metama just b'masa, but that meat would be metama even b'oihel, in accordance with Yehuda ben Becerra's teaching later on. Ika di'amri, another version of Rava's teaching, Amar Rava hochi katani. The Mishnah, we had originally raised the question of, once you tell me something is nevela, it's obvious that it's metama b'masa, so what is the Mishnah trying to convey? So here, Rava says, hochi katani. Zu metama b'masa, v'yesh l'cho acheres, shi kezu, she metama b'masa, v'eino metama b'oil. There's another situation where there will also be Tumas Masa and not Tumas Oyel. The Ezo, and what is that? Zu Takruvas Vediskechovim. That is an animal sacrificed to an idol. And what the Mishnah is implying or conveying is that the Tumas Masa that you see in the Mishnah applies to a Gentile doing a Shechita, standard Shechita, and this Tumas Masa will apply also to an animal sacrificed to an idol. And the Mishnah is telling us Tumas Masa, yes, but not Tumas Oil. Udolo Karebi Yehuda Ben Becerra. And this conclusion would be unlike Rabbi Yehuda Ben Becerra. Desanya, and here is the source that features Rabbi Yehuda Ben Becerra. Rabbi Yehuda Ben Becerra Omer, Minatakubas Yehuda Kovim, Shehi Metama Be'oil. From where do we know that animals offered as sacrifices to idols result in Tumas Oil? In other words, that meat found in the same under the same roof as a person, the person would become Tomei. Shinemar, now the Pasuk indicating that things slaughtered, meat slaughtered to idols, creates Tumas Ohel, is alluded to in the following Pasuk. Vayitzmedu lebaal pa'or, vayochlu zivchei mesim. Baal pa'or is the name of an idol. And it says that they drew unto this idol, and they ate zivchei mesim. Ma mes metame boil, just like a corpse conveys tuma through being through overshadowing, namely by being under the same roof, a corpse will communicate tuma to other items under the same roof. Af takruvas v'rischachovim metame be'oil, takruvas v'rischachovim meat that slaughtered two sacrifices, two idols, will have the same result, and that's encaptured in the phrase zivchei mesim. Zivchei, meaning something that's slaughtered to idols, is treated like a mace, and thereby conveying Tumas Oyel. That, of course, is Rabbi Yehuda ben Becerra's approach, and we saw above that there are those that disagree. The Mishnah. Hashochet b'layla v'chein hasuma sheshochat shechitoso k'shera. One who slaughters at night, and similarly a blind person conducting a slaughtering, the shechita is kosher. In other words, the fact that something, that the that the shoychet did not see the meat, didn't see the animal, doesn't play a role in affecting the kashrus. The Gemara points out linguistically that by opening the Mishnah, opening up with the expression hashochet, hashochet the evid in l'chadchilo bo, it implies that it's something that will accept only post facto. But as far as offering meat to be shechted at night, or offering meat to a blind man to do the shechita, that we would not do. Only if it's done, does the Mishnah say it's kosher. So the Gemara asks, well, v'ramini, but we can now show a source that contradicts this conclusion that l'chadchilo lo. Here we have a source that says the oilam shochtin. You can shecht at all times, bein b'yom u'bein b'layla, bein b'rosh hagag, bein b'rosh hasfina. Notice we've dashed underlined key expressions here, especially where it says u'bein b'layla. So we're saying you can shecht at night perfectly well, no different than shechting by day. So the idea of shochet balayla is not b'di'evet. In this source, it's a l'chadchilo time. Omar Rav Papa b'shavuka kenegdo. The source we just read that said you can shecht by day and by night, that night is a reference to a case where there is a torch that's illuminating the area. Omar Avashi daikonami. You can actually come to this conclusion by careful reading of the sources. The katani hasam dumya diyom, the hocha dumya desuma shmamina. The source that said the shechita balayla is good l'chadchila is in the same source that yom was featured. And just like yom is something that's good l'chadchila, so to the laila is good l'chadchila. Now, how can the laila be good l'chadchila? So we explained that's if you have a torch illuminating the area. However, the Mishnah that said b'di'evet hashochet b'layla, how can I see from the Mishnah that we're talking on a b'di'evet level? He says hocha dumya desuma shmamina. The case of laila is taught together with a suma, with a blind person, and just like a blind person has no seeing possibility whatsoever, I understand that that's not a case where there's avuka kenegdo, and hence it's like that the laila described in the Mishnah is like the case of the suma, and just like the case of the suma is only good b'di'evet, so too the laila in the Mishnah is good only b'di'evet. And what we have to emphasize here is that the fact that the Mishnah teaches Suma, I understand that's a case where there is no Avuka Tekenegdo. But the source that taught Laila together with Yom, just like Yom is a time where there is illumination, that the Laila featured in that source was also a nighttime with illumination. And that's what was meant by Shavuka Kenegdo. With that, we conclude our Shiur for today.